Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, everything is possible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and I'm here with my brothers, Terrell Jackson.
What's up, everyone?
And Taj Jackson.
Hello.
Okay. Why aren't you both prepared again? Why is your mic so far?
You know what? When you started that, I was like, my mic's a little low, but I'm all right.
Do you want to do our Twitter mention, Terrell?
As TJ said, we are live on the Power of Love Radio Show. So if you are listening to us right now, we thank you for joining us. Later on in the show, we will open it up to phones, right? The phones questions via Twitter. So if you have questions about the topic that we're about to discuss and you want to ask them, please send us a tweet at our handle, which is at DDJ Foundation. Taj, you want to give the other social media?
Facebook, it's DEE Jackson Foundation. And Instagram, it's at DEE Jackson Foundation. And the website is www.ddjf.org.
But if you have questions,
Twitter.
Reach out to us via Twitter or the phone line. And the phone line, the number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
Nice. You're on a roll. You want to do a disclaimer?
It's 2017. No, I always leave the disclaimer to you.
The disclaimer to me?
Yeah.
Good food today.
Todd, why don't you do the disclaimer?
No.
All right.
I'm not prepared for that.
We are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions in an attempt to help you overcome what you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and find it. Don't just rely on us.
Yeah.
And why are you laughing, Terrell?
Because I just think that's funny when you read that.
So today we have a wonderful guest.
Yeah. I missed last week's show, by the way.
Yeah, what happened?
I was sick.
You're sick. You feel better now?
I feel a lot better.
Good.
I do.
You look good. You look like you just showered. You got your hair done.
Yeah, man. Even though it's not, you know.
How are you liking your beard, by the way?
I don't know. I forgot about it.
You're still growing, huh?
Yeah.
This is your first time with a beard, right?
Yeah, it's the longest I've ever had it.
Todd, you never had a beard.
Never.
No.
Neither have I. Not
it's
like that.
Not, I just can't
It's not
do it.
Uncomfortable when you're like laying down?
No,
I can't do that.
I don't even remember.
More power to him, but I could not.
That's cool, man. How long are you going?
I don't know. Well, I mean, I trimmed it and all that. It's not like I've let it grow as long as it can go.
You take care of it. You maintain
it.
Yeah,
of course.
He looks like he should be in like ice or something.
I feel like
in snow. Yeah, like in snow, like it'd be a snowstorm or something.
This guy?
No. You know what? My kids really like it.
Yeah, it looks good,
man. My kids Papa T rocked the beard for a little while. Yeah. Something about fatherhood. Yeah, you might creep in there.
I might shock everyone.
then I'm going to be really scared.
Anything exciting that happened the last week? Or really for you, because I haven't... You haven't shared what you've up to in 2017.
I've been doing a lot of cleaning. Cleaning out.
Yes.
Getting rid of a lot of junk.
Just tossing
all your
it?
Stuff that you have. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, I was about to say, but I shouldn't have any
you
more.
You guys have so much stuff at
still?
My house. Yeah. But, I've been, you know, getting rid of things, and I came across a lot of, like, memories. I haven't gotten rid of that stuff, but I saw, Taj, I have to give it to you, by the way. I forgot to bring it, but your invitation for your two-year-old birthday party.
Oh.
It's a Mickey Mouse invitation.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I found a lot of cool stuff.
That is cool.
I saw an old picture of when Royal was a baby with you and Royal holding him.
Nice.
The one that we did in our room upstairs.
So why don't you take a picture of it and just send it to me?
I think you might have it.
Oh, really?
If not, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So today's guest, you guys, we have... I reached out to her... her name is Dr. She's a psychologist, and her name is Dr. Mary Lamia. And I said that right because Terrell thankfully remind me something like it's like a Sicilian, think Sicilian, and Mamma Mia. So it's Dr. Mary is what I'm going to call her by. But I reached out to her at the end of last year, actually, and we've had a couple of great conversations. But you know, I really like the way she talks. I like the way she writes, and I'm a big fan of hers. You know, she kind of I like to think I've read and heard every angle of certain things, but she corrected me quickly in our conversation. When I told her what, you know, exactly what our foundation is and what our mission is.
Okay.
So without further ado, I guess I should try to reach out to her and get her on the line. Why are you looking at me like that? Dr. Mary, you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. So Todd, Terrell, Dr. Mary, it's the first time you guys have spoken.
Yes.
And Dr. Mary,
nice to meet the three T's.
You get on to them, Dr. Mary. You have my permission. If they're wrong, you get on to them like you got on to me. But I was just, I was just sharing with everyone how I was really, I really liked how you rechanged something that I had been so comfortable saying, which was I was telling you on our conversation that, you know, we're trying to help people overcome and get over, you know, grief and loss. And you cut me off and said that
grief is not something to get over.
I loved it. Mm. I loved it. And can you explain that? Explain that a bit more, Dr. Mary.
Sure. What I told TJ is that basically we have emotional memories, and to think that we could get over grief means that we would have to erase all of our emotional memories, and that's impossible. Although a lot of people believe in the stages of grief and like the stages of dying that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross put out there so many years ago, of you go through denial and anger and bargaining and depression, and then you get to acceptance. And that just isn't the case. Grief doesn't go that way. Grief is more like a cycle, where sometimes it emerges and it comes into your consciousness and then it gets buried again. And what brings it into consciousness? Well, emotional memories come up because we're reminded by something just in our everyday lives. If you lose your mother, for example, then you might pass by a store that reminds you of her, or see a person who has features that remind you of her. And that brings up all of your emotional memories. Of course, you're not going to feel them in the same way you felt them at the original loss, but you're going to feel something, because emotions make us pay attention. They make us feel. Mm. So when we've had an experience of loss in our lives, there's a lot of things that will bring up that loss again. We don't just work it through and get over it and then it doesn't impact us anymore, as a lot of people believe. And because of that, a lot of people start feeling guilty or as though something's wrong with them or they should go see a therapist when these emotional memories come up and they feel their loss again, as though they didn't work it through properly. And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
The other thing that really brings up a loss is when people have age-matching anniversaries. For example, when they become the age of a parent they lost, or when their age matches the age the parent was when they were born, or all kinds of things like that, or a parent's birthday, or the anniversary date of the loss. All those things can bring up those emotional memories and make you feel the grief you once felt.
So, Dr. Mary, I got a lot of nods. I shouldn't say like I'm talking to you. You got a lot of nods from my brother sitting here. But first of all, Dr. Mary is someone, for all our listeners, check out our website. It's www.marylamia.com, and you'll find blog posts, a lot of blog posts, links to books that she's written that were great received. And I just think you're a great resource. Taj, were you going to say something?
No, I think that we eventually will put that link up as well on our Twitter feed as well, so that people can check out her website.
So, and then on one of your posts, Dr. Mary, grief isn't something to get over. There's several quotes that I highlighted that I thought were really strong. One was just a recap that I think you just said, was the notion that one mourns a loss and then gets over it. To the extent that emotions about the loss are not triggered in the future, it's a myth. So I think that's something that I've learned from you, and I want to thank you for that, because I was under the impression I could just get over something at one point. But I have to learn to accept it and learn to navigate through it.
Do we really get over anything, you know? We really don't.
Yeah.
We don't even get over old girlfriends or old boyfriends all those years later. Something can trigger an emotional memory. It doesn't mean you want to go back to them, mm-hmm. but you might remember the pleasant times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another thing you mentioned, which I'd never thought of as a concept, but something that, and I'm going to speak for you, Terrell, and I hope you can open up. But the age-matching anniversary reaction, which you had just mentioned and I had read about in your post earlier today, which is when a person's age matches the age of a parent that they had lost. We lost our parent when we were kids, and our mother was 40.
39.
39 at the time of her mm-hmm. passing. And we had a show on Lifetime called Jackson's Next Generation, where it kind of showcases Terrell, who had at his 39th birthday.
40th
birthday. So go ahead, explain it.
So basically, our mother, as TJ was saying, passed away. She was 39 and didn't make it to 40. So during the show, I celebrated my 40th birthday, and that was a difficult moment for me, because I did really think about my mom a lot. I mean, I always think about her, but for some reason, getting to the 40th birthday, an age that she didn't reach, I don't know how to explain it. It just really, I don't know
how
to explain it.
It's striking, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's striking. It's almost as though we have a clock in our heads that says how long we're going to live. And when we lose a parent early, it's like when we get past that time, there's a sense of unreality, isn't there?
Yeah. It was almost like almost like crossing the finish line in a weird sense, I guess.
Yes, there's great relief when you cross that line. There's great relief, as though I just cheated death.
Well, I didn't have it where I felt that I was going to pass away at her age. I didn't feel like that. I felt more like...
Did you feel guilt?
No, it wasn't that I felt guilt. I just felt sad that mom didn't get to 40. You know what I mean?
And did it seem strange how young you were and how young she was when you recognized how young 40 is?
Yes, that I did feel. That I felt that I was very, 40 may seem old, but I feel very young. And, to lose somebody at that age, to 40, is so young.
Yes, and so that comes to mind too, is that just how young that is, because when you're a kid, 40 seems awfully old,
mm-hmm.
but when you're 40, it doesn't seem so old.
Yeah,
yes, it does.
So, Dr. Mary, what do you recommend when there's like a anniversary? Maybe the wrong term, but an anniversary of a passing of a loved one. If someone loses their parent in November or a loved one in November, and every November 17th or whatever that date is comes, how do you advise people to deal with it?
To recognize it and celebrate it in some way, mm-hmm. whether it's a simple thing like lighting a candle or going into church or thinking about what that person meant to you or something very positive about them.
Mm-hmm.
I love what the Italians do. You know, the Italians are all filled with superstition in that culture. And many Italians believe that the death day of a person you love deeply is a special day, and it's a lucky day.
Mm.
Almost as though their spirit is around you.
Mm-hmm.
And to think about what you want in your life on that day.
Oh, wow.
So they celebrate it.
It's a celebration of sorts, almost kind of mystical superstition, where it's like a lucky day. Like, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
and to think about what you want, but you're also looking at your life and talking to yourself about what you want in the years you have left.
Yeah, that's very interesting. When I got married a couple years ago...
That's another day that is a trigger
and
for
loss. And I definitely made sure it was... The place that I got married at was very symbolic to me because I felt like it was a place where my mom, you know, a lot of memories, you know, of my mom and my uncle were at. And so I refused to change that location, you know, when... But I did feel, you know, on that day I felt very close to them in, you know, in a way that they were watching me. And
is that because the day of your marriage is the same day that mom and dad
as well? I picked a lot of symbolic date things for the wedding. One being that the anniversary of my mom and dad's wedding was the same day that my wife and I got married. But also just the location that a lot of our childhood was at Havenhurst.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our graduation parties were at Havenhurst. And so I felt that, you know, for celebration-wise, a lot of our celebratory things were at Havenhurst, and mom was in charge of a lot of those things. And so, you know, in a way, I felt that she was watching over the wedding. And so I understand what you're saying in that way.
But it was a way in your mind to have her there.
Yes, 100%. Yes.
Right. And so, you know, somebody who doesn't have that sense would say, well, of course she's not there. But in your mind, of course she was there. And that's where emotional memory is so wonderful, because she is very present in your emotional memories. And to have it at Havenhurst and having those memories attached to it just brought it all forth and made her present for you. So that was a lovely thing to do, and to have the dates matching and all of that is really very special.
Dr. Mary, something that I've learned about you is you're very strong on emotions, listening to them, understanding them, not trying to negate them. They're a natural something. It's a natural thing that we as humans go through, and it's trying to tell us something. It's our body's way of talking, in a sense. Is that kind of accurate? And if so, can you elaborate on emotions and maybe tell us something we need to do when we have emotions?
Right. Well, a lot of people think that they should disregard their emotions, especially negative ones, as though cognitions, what we think, is more important than what we feel, and as though it's more rational. Fact is, the process goes together. When an emotion is triggered by an event or a situation or a thing in our environment, and they are all the time, whether or not we're aware of them, it joins with our thoughts. Our thoughts help us make sense of what we feel. And some people only pay attention to their thoughts rather than, you know, what their feeling is in their body. And it's very important to pay attention to both, because thought is only giving emotion reason. But an emotion gets triggered because our brain is drawing our attention to something to make us care. Emotions make us care because they make us feel. Feeling makes us care.
Mm.
And so emotions direct our attention and help us think on our feet and help us make decisions along with the help of our thinking. And so without them, we would be rather helpless. We wouldn't adapt. We wouldn't learn. So they're very important. Now, as far as negative emotions are concerned, I mean, people think about positive or negative emotions as though positive emotions are good and negative emotions are bad, and then there's this whole positive psychology movement, and people think they should feel happy and good all the time. And if you want to feel happy all the time, it's not going to work, because that's not how our brains work.
Mm-hmm.
So a negative emotion is just as motivating as a positive one, and sometimes more. You know, look at what fear does. Fear is very motivating, and anxiety and anger. It's how we learn to deal with them and how we learn from the experience of emotion that really, really counts. We're at a great advantage if we understand emotion and know what to do about them when they're activated. It's a great advantage in life. And people who get dysregulated by their emotions rather than use their emotions for information, because that's what emotional reactions are. They're simply your brain giving you information about what it perceives. The people who become dysregulated by them are not using the information in a way that will help them adapt. They just keep spinning. For example, people who say they need anger management. Ever meet anybody who says, mm-hmm. well, I need anger management, or you think they need anger management?
Right.
People often have anger reactions, not because of anger, but because they're feeling shame. They just don't know they're feeling shame. Shame is the number one culprit behind people who have angry responses, whether it's because somebody has cut them off on the road. That's actually a shame response that has people react with anger. Or if their goal is blocked in some way, or if they disconnect from somebody. You see that a lot in relationships, where when you feel disconnected from somebody you love, it's actually a shame response you're having, but people respond to their shame with anger. Mm. There's four responses to shame. People attack others, like anger. They'll attack themselves, they'll withdraw, or they'll avoid. And avoidance is a big one,
mm-hmm.
because that leads people to drink and use drugs and do all kinds of things that hurt themselves. And in most addictions, for example, people are feeling shame, and they don't know how to deal with their shame, so they become dysregulated by it, and it's easier to snort cocaine or have a drink or whatever they do or eat instead of looking at the shame that they feel. And that's why AA is so wonderful, because when people go to any of the 12-step programs, they announce their shame. They say it. I am an alcoholic. They talk about their shame. And then they have the whole community who is supporting them and helping them learn from their shame response rather than drink it away.
From your post, Seeking Comfort the Impossible Way, I actually underlined, because that it's about the main theme of it is how emotions motivate us to do something. But a lot of times, I guess, we as humans will try to find comfort in, like you said, alcohol or comfort foods, narcotics, drugs, and things like that. And I liked what you said, and I'm gonna read a quote of one of your quotes. You said, "For the moment, you may imagine you have found relief, but you have only embraced avoidance." Unfortunately, comfort foods are similar. Rather than endure anxiety, stress, or shame, comfort foods are used for temporary avoidance. So basically, all we're doing is just avoiding something we're going to have to deal with. Is that pretty much
right? Defensive and coping responses to shame or anxiety or whatever it is we feel are those four I mentioned. And the things you were talking about are avoidance responses for the most part. Now, it doesn't mean they're bad. That's how people learn to cope. But then they don't learn otherwise. They don't take a look at it and say, gee, every time I feel stressed or every time I'm angry at my girlfriend, I go and have a drink. If you look at it, if you look at your shame responses or your anxiety responses, then you learn from them. And that's the purpose, is mm-hmm. to learn.
Mm-hmm. So then at that point, what do you do?
At that point, what do you do?
Yes.
How do you learn from it?
Yeah, well, I understand. First you have to recognize the situation and the problem or the challenge.
And then you sit with the emotion for a little while and you listen to what your emotions are trying to tell you. Their emotions are trying to help you recognize or adapt to problems or opportunities and what's going on around you. But if we try to snuff them out with drugs or with anything we do, then we're not learning. We're avoiding looking at it.
So it's kind of...
And it's hard.
It's kind of... You can kind of equate it to maybe having a fever, which tells your body something's wrong. Or
exactly.
Or if you stub your toe, you know, you feel that sense of pain because something happened to your toe. So when you have these emotions, it's pretty much telling you something is off, and you have to embrace it and deal with it the right way. Is that pretty accurate?
Exactly. Yes. I think I mentioned nail biting in that blog post.
Yeah.
Ever knew anybody who
bites I'm terrible at that, actually.
TJ?
Yes, yes.
You bite your nails?
It's just kind of fun. You know, it's not that it's fun. It's just, I don't know.
I get mad at Roy.
So does LeBron James, though. LeBron James.
You looked that up, didn't you?
No, I always watch him. No, I didn't look it up.
You
wouldn't
see other nail biters
famous
over
famous nail biters, TJ
no,
and LeBron James.
I didn't. I really didn't. But I just noticed he's always biting his nails. I don't know. It's. I think at this point it's a habit. Yeah, what is the cure?
I have a cure for nail biting.
Tell me, what is it?
Well, you know.
Gloves.
Yeah. Gloves is one.
Now, let's see. You're going to have your wife do it.
Okay.
Participate in this. So hopefully she will.
Okay.
Or you can do it yourself, too. But it really helps if you have a partner. I've given the cure to a number of graduate students, and it's worked every time. And I use it with children when I see parents who complain about their children biting their nails. Mm-hmm. And here's the bottom line. The bottom line is like most habits, you know, nail biting is something one does for comfort, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels good, like you said. It feels good.
Yeah.
So one of the things that happens with nail biting usually starts pretty young. Mm-hmm. When did you start biting your nails? Oh. 2 or 3 or 4 years old?
I'm sure I was quite young.
It's
been lifelong. This isn't a new habit.
And you're right. It usually starts very, very young. And so here's the cure. If you were a parent and your child bit her nails or his nails, this is what I would tell you to do. And this translates to adults with their partners. So every night before the child goes to bed, the parent takes each finger and looks at every single nail, one at a time, and the fingers, you talk to the fingers as though they're little people. So you take the first finger and you take a look at it, let's say it's the pinky, and you take a look at it and you say, oh, TJ was not good to you today. You know, TJ, I'm really sorry. TJ really, you know, gnawed at you. And he doesn't mean to be mean. He doesn't. He really loves you. So, you know, we'll just try to make a difference here. And you kiss the pinky. And then you go to the next finger. Well, TJ was pretty good to you today, but, you know, he's been bad to you all week. I can tell. You know, you're kind of red. And you kiss it. And then you go to the next one. And you do that with every finger every night for 30 days.
Wow. There's
all the fingers become little people. They're little people.
Wow.
And it forms a connection between the child and his fingers and between you and the child. And that's what the child is looking for, is comfort. And ultimately, the child will feel comfort in his fingers and his fingers being okay more than, you know, gnawing them. When he goes to gnaw them, he'll think, what am I doing to this little guy? I don't want to hurt him.
I will keep that in mind for my kids. I actually enjoy my nail biting. I don't know what it is. It's
you don't want to give it up.
I'm stubborn. It's addiction. But
right,
it keeps
but
me.
Would you rather have the connection with your wife kissing your fingers every night?
That sounds good
you how
too.
Wonderful they are.
That sounds good as well.
Instead of gnawing them.
That sounds good as well. I have to admit.
But you know, we look for connection when we're stressed out or anxious, and we go to bite our nails, or go to have a drink, or anything else. You know, human emotions want connection and comfort, and so we find all kinds of maladaptive ways to get it. That's just what humans do.
Yeah. We are here live with Dr. Mary. The phone number, if you want to call in and ask questions to Dr. Mary, is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. One question I have for you right now, Dr. Mary, is in the last post I read, the Seeking Comfort the Impossible Way, you have another great quote that I like to read. Our culture has erroneously taught us that we should find ways to get rid of negative feelings rather than truly experience them. What are some ways to embrace them and experience them? Like if I'm feeling really sad because, let's say, my favorite team just lost the Super Bowl, something simple like that. What would you advise me to do? What do I do? Just embrace it? How do I embrace that? What does that mean?
Well, you feel sad because you're supposed to feel sad, aren't you?
So just accept it.
When your favorite team loses the Super Bowl?
So just accept it. Just say, you know what, this wasn't our year.
I accept feeling sad because my team lost. I'm a little humiliated for them, and I'm a little angry that the coach didn't do a better job.
But
that doesn't mean you have to go get drunk or do anything else or do something that'll hurt you or go back to bed. See, the feelings don't tell you what to do. You tell you what to do with them. And so people often use their feelings. I'm feeling sad, so therefore I ate the entire rest of the pizza I was eating during the game. It's not telling you to do that.
How do we make that connection as a society? Where do we get this idea of comfort foods when we're sad, when, you know, we just broke up with a serious relationship, now I got to go get a box of donuts? Where did that...
And I wasn't looking at you. I was looking down.
No, first, I don't know why. You like donuts.
I've never heard of anybody doing that.
Say donuts?
That's
I did.
Good one.
I've done it.
What happened in our society where that happened,
guilty,
where we have to equate comfort with foods?
Or with nail biting because they like it. Because they think because they want something to take away the feeling and make them feel better, as though we've got to get rid of the emotion. And we don't have to get rid of the emotion, because if you can sit with your broken heart and learn something from it and say to yourself, okay, I'm gonna take some notes here on my feelings. My heart is broken. I'm mad at this person right now for breaking my heart, but what can I learn from it? What does this tell me about myself?
Mm-hmm.
What does this tell me about what I need to do differently? Or what does it inform me about what went wrong and how I can gain some insight? But if we can sit with the feeling, then we can learn, but we don't. We want to get away from the feeling as though it's a contaminant of some sort.
Yeah.
When in fact, that's our opportunity to learn. Emotions present us with a tremendous opportunity for learning. But sometimes it's just how hard to sit with them and listen to what they're trying to tell us.
Nice. Taj, you got anything from Twitter?
I do have a Twitter question. Should we say who it's from?
Yeah.
From Edwina. She wanted to know, how do you adjust and deal with grief? Like, she's had 5 deaths in your family in 9 months, along with my mom's dementia declining.
First, we're sorry,
yeah.
Edwina.
Yes, and that is a continuous loss and grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ongoing, because if Edwina's dealing with her mother's dementia, I mean, that's a continuing situation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it feels overwhelming, you know, and emotions like that would feel so overwhelming, as though it's just going to keep going on. I mean, it's not, but it feels as though it is. And so in that case, I would say, if there are any ways in which you can carve out time for yourself to do other things and to distract yourself in ways that feel good to you, that are not destructive, like comfort food, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
That would help, because remember, emotional memories just kind of add up. And so if you're constantly immersed in negativity like that, or grief, it can make you feel depressed. And that's what a depressed mood is. You know, mm-hmm. it's ongoing, continuous. When an emotion keeps getting triggered, when sadness is repeatedly triggered, it gives you a depression. So you want to interrupt it with some other things, even if it's 2 hours a day, or, you know, where you carve out time where it's specific, you're going to do something that gives you some relief from that feeling.
That's a good point.
Is that something like working out, trying to get out, physical activities? I mean, you're up in Northern California. We're here in Southern California. We've been getting slammed with rain, but it's actually a beautiful day today. Is that something?
Call it beautiful, but
it's a beautiful day, Taj. Stop.
Nice. Every day is a beautiful day, Taj.
Exactly. But is that something you would advise? Obviously, working out, just finding some type of activity that's a positive thing.
Activities like that are really, really healthy when you're stuck in this cycle of sadness or grief or loss.
Why is that?
Because you distract yourself. Because your attention is drawn to other things. It's not just the endorphins. It's drawing your attention to other stimuli. So if you go outside, when you go outside, your attention is drawn to so many things, especially...
Uh-oh.
Did we just lose her?
This is Mary Lamia. If you wish to leave a message, please do so at my office, 415-457-2...
We'll get Dr. Mary back. Yes. She was saying something pretty cool, and I just lost her. I don't know what happened.
That was interesting.
That was very.
What do you guys think so far? What have you learned so far?
I mean, everything that she said, and you know, it's hit on point with me. You know, I definitely think, you know, when you're going through some kind of depression or whatever, just doing some outside stimuli. I would say it doesn't mean going outside. I think even going to, like, watch a funny movie or just...
It's almost like we were talking about earlier, a couple of weeks back, with the video games.
Yeah.
Escapism.
Or Three Stooges, or, you know, like, yeah. Or watch a comedy.
Distraction.
Or distraction. You know, I wouldn't watch a sad movie, you know. I'd probably watch something fun, something completely opposite of how you're feeling. And I'd watch it, actually, with an audience, too. If you're going to go see a movie, see a comedy with... Because laughter, you know, around you can help you, too. You know,
right.
It's, you know... Because the last thing you want to do is be alone in that thing. So if you're watching it with people and they're laughing, it kind of, you know, becomes contagious too.
Yeah. But then I forget who we're talking to, but then it was an issue of, should you be happy in a time where you're supposed to feel sad? Remember that?
Oh, should you feel guilty for
guilty?
Yeah, for
laughing.
Yeah.
When you're supposed to, quote unquote, be sad and depressed and...
Yeah, I never had a problem with that. I never felt that you shouldn't be happy, or you shouldn't, because I feel like someone's life, you know, if you've lost, you know, like for us with mom, I love the happy memories.
Mm-hmm.
And if that made me chuckle or smile, then that was a positive thing. I never thought of it like I shouldn't be happy right now or whatever. I think, you know, especially with mom would want us to be happy.
Yeah.
So if anything, she would want us to be, you know, clinging on to those moments and to create more moments like that, as opposed to, you know. And so that's another thing that got me through it.
You know, it's interesting, though. It seems like it's such a thin line between distracting, like a positive distraction versus...
Ignoring.
Avoiding.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't... That's something I'm very curious about. But I think it's... Is it basically... Because obviously time plays a huge role in learning how to navigate through things like this. But I think it's basically positive stuff versus negative stuff. Is that kind of a simple way to say it? Is that what you would think?
Yeah, I think... Well, what I got from her was that really paying attention to your emotions and to what you're feeling inside, and not ignoring it, not avoiding it. But at the same time, it's okay to get away and do something like going for a workout or... watching a movie or whatever it may be.
One of the things that happens is that when you have a situation of a lot of sadness or grief or things happening in your environment that keep triggering that sadness, you got to remember that, you know, grief and sadness are emotions that are telling you to remember. And so they keep alerting you to remember, and you're trying to forget all that's going on around you because it's painful to you. So if you just acknowledge it, okay, I get it. You know, I'm sad. A lot of sad things are happening, and it's telling you to take some action to relieve the sadness. But you feel helpless in certain situations. I mean, if you lost somebody or somebody has dementia, for example, you're helpless to deal with that. And so it's important to interrupt it.
So, Dr. Mary, I don't know how much you heard while we were trying to get you back on. The thing I wanted to know is there a way you can describe or explain kind of the difference between something negative, such as avoiding an emotion, versus something positive, as I guess the term would be distracting. Is that kind of accurate?
I would say that's a good summary.
Okay, so basically engaging in a positive activity or something upbeat or positive is probably the best way to help this, for simple terms.
Or just something different. If you do something different, you know, if you stay in the house every day and do the same thing, you know, you're more likely to keep triggering the same stuff. But if you do something different, you're diverting your attention away. I'm wondering what Terrell thinks about this conversation.
Terrell?
Carol,
no, I love it.
No, I love Dr. Mary. There's a lot going through my head.
Yeah, what's going through your head, Mr.
Well,
Jackson?
There's a lot of information here. and I'm trying not to change it into a different direction. But before we even called you, we were discussing, my brother was asking me how my week's been and what I've been doing. And I told him I've been cleaning out a lot of stuff and rearranging things. And one of the things that I came across actually was a lot of stuff from my mom. It's VHS tape back in the day, but I have a VHS tape of a news clipping of my mom, you know, from her passing. I have the answering machine tape of her leaving messages. I have so many things, and I don't know. I didn't listen to it because I didn't want to at the moment. I obviously have it and I'm keeping it. But I just came through, I went through a lot of things, and I came across songs that I was writing around that time to help me get through that. But it just listening to you speak and thinking about how I was feeling, it, you know, it's obvious you want to hold on to those memories, and they're triggers, you know. Some are good triggers, some are hard. And the question I wanted to ask you, and this is probably a stupid question or an obvious question, but I wonder, obviously people pass differently, and I was wondering if it's that much harder, and I think it's pretty obvious, the way my mom passed, how she passed, she was murdered. Losing someone regardless is tough and difficult, but I don't even know if you can put a percentage on it or anything, but I wanted to know it's like, what's the percentage of difficulty of getting, well, you don't get over grief, but dealing with it because she was murdered versus just losing her to something else, you know what I mean?
You mean when you didn't get to
say
goodbye?
How did I know there was something significant on Terrell's mind?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that I couldn't put a percentage on it, Terrell, but I think it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how you think it's different?
Because I feel like I'm dealing with two things here. You know, it's
you are.
It's one thing she passed, and then another thing is she was murdered. So
you're dealing with loss and assault.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult, you know, when you think about losing your mom. had she passed some other kind of way.
Terrell, do you think it's the surprise factor or the fact?
I thought about that too, and I mean, obviously, when you lose somebody, it doesn't. Yeah. Either way, you know, she could have passed from something else where, you know, there's a time limit, and that could just be just as hard, you know. But
it feels more preventable.
Yeah, if there's like a feeling of being robbed, like.
Yes, she should still be the robbery aspect of it.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's because it's loss, but it's merged with anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And shock, surprise, but it is more of a theft.
Yeah.
I think it has the flavor of it has a significance that makes it vibrate in a different way is the only way I can put it.
Yeah.
I think it's being robbed.
I think because there's an element of hate involved. Mm-hmm. That makes it difficult because
I agree.
You know?
I agree. And, you know, even a simple difference between if you lose an item, let's say, you know, your iPhone, you lose your phone versus somebody steals it from you.
Mm.
Right.
There's a big difference in how you feel.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's a great point, Dr. Mary.
And so I would double the impact.
Yeah. Wow.
Because there's a lot more emotion involved, and there's a lot of emotions, different emotions involved.
So Dr. Mary,
it makes me want to kiss everybody's fingernail.
Oh, awesome. It's Dr. Mary. Dr. Mary, we're running on the time. We're close to having to wrap it up. What I like to do before we say goodbye is give you one last thought or one last thing you want to share to the world. So go ahead. In a minute or so, just say whatever you want us to take away as a listener.
The only thing I could think of is as a quote by Shakespeare. And, you know, Shakespeare probably was able to articulate grief better than anybody when he says in Macbeth, "Give sorrow words. The grief that does not speak knits up the overwrought heart and bids it break." So I would say it's very important to give your grief words, to talk about it and to share it and communicate it. And that's exactly what the three of you are doing with your work.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Yeah,
Mary.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And whenever you're coming down to LA, please let us know so we can have you in studio. Because the phone.
Oh, I would love to. Anytime.
The phones are going crazy right now. I'll be honest, when I tried to answer a phone call is when we lost you, so I'm not going
to. I didn't want to say that. I saw them.
So I'm not going to be able to try to answer a call because then I may lose you again. But next time you're in the studio, I know there's a lot of our listeners that will want to ask you questions and things. But as a first starter, I want to thank you, and you know, I think you're amazing, and I love your work. So thank you so much.
Well, I'm in LA all the time, so I'm
awesome.
Be happy to come into the studio and. Give
hugs. Awesome. Dr. Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And have a great week, rest of the week.
You too.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So there it is. She's awesome. Really, I really like Dr. Mary. And to all our callers who've been calling in, I'm sorry. My phone, my screen just has a bunch of phone calls missed. So I apologize. I just don't know how to work the system. just yet.
Yeah.
Taj is the tech guy. He's supposed to be the one to do
it. I knew you were going
to
throw me under the bus, but you're going to blame it. Blame is another reason you should.
Well, Dr. Mary probably responsibility. Has a book on blaming, too.
Yeah.
No, but she has some really cool books, and I love it because they're all really highly rated on Amazon, and she's making a difference. So, again, another phone call's coming in, but I'm sorry. I should have. No, I can't answer it. All right, you guys, is that it?
That's it.
That's
pretty
now.
Much
we'll
it.
We'll throw up the website. On the website, her website, we'll throw it up on Twitter or something.
Anything else you guys want to add?
That was great.
That was good, right?
Very good.
Yeah, Todd, very anything? Much. No, just...
You look at, like you want to read something from...
No, I'm constantly reading, you know, tweets and stuff like that. And I'm just... We're very appreciative of the community that we have and how supportive they are to everyone.
So... Let's give a quick social media handles. So if you're enjoying what we're doing, please follow us on our social media and help us share the message of love. We all have to go through grief and loss, and we can only have the best impact if you, our community, is involved. Todd, you want to give some quick handles, and then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, sure. Twitter is at DDJ Foundation. Facebook is at... It's not at. It's, Facebook is DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. Instagram is at DD... at DEEDEE Jackson Foundation, and the website is www.ddjf.org.
And I have to say, since we've been doing this, I've been feeling better overall in life. Have you guys?
Me too.
Just talking about it, I think, helps.
Yeah? Talking about and sharing. Sharing helps too.
Cool. All right, everyone. That's it, right?
Next week.
We're done. Next week, next Wednesday, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we'll see you then.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our power...